This is Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty. Earlier in the program, we heard from Republican Congressman Bill Huizinga from West Michigan. Got his thoughts on President Obama's State of the Union speech last night. So let's cross the state now and the aisle to Democratic Congressman Dan Kildee from the east side of Michigan. Hello, Congressman.
Hey, how are you?
Well, we heard a lot about education and income inequality last night from the president. Very big themes, but not a lot of new initiatives. Did you think there were enough new ideas to tackle the nation's problems?
Well, I think there's enough on Congress's agenda right now that the president has articulated that there's plenty of work for us to do. The challenge for us is not so much whether the president has articulated a vision and an agenda, but whether or not we can take it up and get the work done. So it is true that there may not have been any major new initiatives, but there's a lot of work that we've been talking about, that the president's been pushing for, that some of us in Congress have been pushing for, that the House particularly just has not taken up, that I think in many ways the speech last night was a reminder of the agenda that the American people have sent us to take on, and a call to action to make this year a year that we actually do this work.
Well, then, kind of segueing into that inability to get things on his agenda through the House, what were your thoughts about this strategy from the president, in essence saying, if I have to, I will bypass Congress, use more executive orders, use my pen and my phone? You got Republicans saying it's a bad precedent, constitutionally speaking. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't think the president intimated in any way that he would use authority that the Constitution does not grant him. There are examples that go back as far as the history of our nation of presidents using the authority granted to them under the Constitution. It is better when Congress is willing to act to strengthen a policy directive, for example. And we would be far better off if Congress were willing to step up and join the president. But we can't base, and I think this is what the president was saying, just because Congress won't do its job doesn't mean he doesn't have to do his job. He has work to do that he was sent to Washington to execute. And he will use, just as past presidents have, the executive authority vested in him by the Constitution.
So flip the coin over. If we see a Republican in the White House, you would be okay with these kinds of policy directives and executive orders?
Well, here's the thing. The Congress plays an important role, a check and balance on the power of the president. And I think it's entirely appropriate for Congress to provide oversight. That's the legitimate role. So I think it's important for us to separate criticism or differences, which is if we were a Republican in office, yeah, I would certainly probably find differences with that person, but that doesn't rise to the level of some of the claims that there are sort of extra constitutional authority that's being exercised. And in this case, there isn't even a specific example that anybody could point to, because the president wasn't specific. He just said, look, I've got a pen, I've got a phone. He could have said, I have a constitution, I have a pen, I have a phone. That probably would have been a little more clear. But you know, the reason that I'm so sensitive on this point, I am a bit sensitive, is that there are some in Congress, unfortunately, that wouldn't recognize any authority under this president. They clearly recognize broad authority granted to past presidents, Democrats and Republicans. But for reasons that are unfortunately all too obvious, there are some in Congress that simply never have accepted Barack Obama as president of the United States. Some of their reaction to his use of executive authority, I think, unfortunately, is affected by that view.
What reasons do you view that, when you see these reasons seem are very obvious, what reasons do you see for this intransigence?
Well, I don't think there's much doubt that because the president is the first African-American president, I'm not suggesting explicit racism, but there is a tone to some of the depictions of this president that I think unfortunately contribute to that thinking. I mean, there are members of Congress right now sitting on the floor of the House who still believe that he is not legitimately, legally occupying the office of president. To me, it's just insane. It's just insane. And that's unfortunately part of the tone that we deal with here in Washington.
I want to switch gears. Knowing, Congressman Kildee, that you represent the city of Flint, which is, as we know, struggling with its murder rate and with violence, and some folks were really pushing for more gun control, didn't feel like the president spoke enough about that issue. Should there have been more focus on gun control, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the issues where he did make a passing reference. He talked about that in a portion of the speech and particularly tied it to the victims of Sandy Hook. But, you know, I'm sure when these speeches come together, they have to make all sorts of judgments about how much they put into the particular speech. I would have liked to have seen an even broader and deeper discussion about the issue of urban communities generally, which goes to the issue of crime, but goes to a lot of other issues. And gun control would be one of those. But, you know, it is... you know, for us, for many of us who feel strongly about those issues, we would much rather see more of the speech devoted to that particular topic.
It was kind of striking because a year ago with the State of the Union, it was right after Sandy Hook, and there was a big, big portion of the State of the Union address devoted to gun safety measures, and very little was actually done. In making such a kind of a passing mention, has the president kind of given up on gun reform, do you think?
I hope he hasn't. I mean, I think the numbers, unfortunately, in the House particularly, don't lend itself to dealing with that issue very effectively. I think that's unfortunate. I hope the president continues to press the point and perhaps uses other venues to do so. Obviously, it would have been great to have a stronger position articulated in the State of the Union, but you know, those are judgments that have to be made by the White House, and I'm sure the president's view has not changed, but unfortunately, the willingness of Congress to take this up is just all too weak.
Now, the president never made mention during the actual address of Amir Hekmati, who, as we know, we've covered this story here on Stateside, the Marine veteran from Michigan who's being held in Iran, and you have been working for Hekmati's release. After the president walked down from the podium after the speech, the two of you managed to speak for a moment, and there were reports that the two of you spoke about Amir Hekmati. Did you?
Yes, we did. I've spoken to the president a couple of times now about Amir's situation, and I just encouraged him to continue the fight to get Amir released from Iran and encouraged him to continue the process of negotiating with Iran, because I think that's the two, while they're not directly connected, obviously there's a reason that I would bring those both up in the same context.
Mm-hmm.
And the president reassured me and asked that I pass on to the family that he's on it, that they are not giving up. I had the same conversation with Secretary Kerry, as a matter of fact, just moments before I spoke to the president.
And then finally, I know we all as a nation, I think, really felt moved by seeing wounded veteran Corey Remsburg getting that applause at the State of the Union. But I wondered if you would take a moment and tell us who was your guest last night at the State of the Union.
Yeah, I'd love to. I brought along for the State of the Union Sergeant Cameron Corder, who is an injured Army sergeant injured in Afghanistan. He's recovering at Walter Reed Hospital right here just outside of Washington. And so I asked him to come along, and you know, it was nice to be able to have a constituent here, but also somebody who represents the very best of our next generation and somebody who is willing to, you know, to serve his country and has paid a price for it and is, you know, just as optimistic as any 30-year-old would be. So I was really proud to have Cameron there with me.
Democratic Congressman Dan Kildee representing Michigan's 5th District. Congressman, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.